For the sake of time, you know, we have a picnic coming up. We're going to transition now right into our question and answer time with Mark and Julie. And so I guess you still have some, you have some last minute time if you want to forward your questions or texts. I know it's, you know, just coming off of Jeremiah and the kind of deep and heavy things in that book, I think questions I would have would come out of that book and want to talk more about that. But we have before us some other questions that you guys have dropped in the box or have texted to that phone number. And so why don't we just get right into it and no segue. So you guys have to just come up here. I invite Mark and Julie. Mark, come back up, and Julie to come up here. And what I'm going to do is just moderate this time. Give them a hand. I'll moderate this time as well as I can and see where the Lord takes, because these can always be interesting, where the Lord takes takes these questions. And so I don't know if I'm sitting in the right place. Where should I be? I feel weird standing behind you. Should I have a seat? I'll stand. It's okay. Thank you. Huh? All right. So why don't we kind of just get into it? I know, Mark, you told us quite a bit about your background and singleness and just how those years were for you. So why don't we begin? I'll ask Julie what her, just kind of your experience was of your singleness. That's just a big question, I know. But if you can just kind of boil it down, and you know where I'm going. All right. Do you want to use this?
Oh, I can share with him. Okay. Yeah, I've been at our at Cornerstone for a very, very long time. And started out kind of as the older person at the old age of 17, when everyone was 12 and 13. And so kind of grew up as like the older sister. And in that way, it was like a family. So in a family, it's weird to like have relationships with your brothers that feel like your brothers. So that was something that for a long time, I think, wasn't really, I don't know, it wasn't really on my mind or wasn't thinking about that. And then, you know, I lived fizzy 20s. I had like, I really enjoyed my singleness. It was a fun time. I was in parachurch ministry. You were just so busy doing ministry work, and you know, you kind of hoped that through that process you'd meet someone, it'd be natural, and things like that. But it wasn't something that I was lusting after or pining after. And then I hit 30, and you know, it became very pressing for my parents. Like, you know, all of a sudden, when I hit 30, actually, I probably went out on my first setup through my parents when I was 28, and it was a huge, big deal. And something I didn't want to do. We fought over it. They're Christians. They love me. They wanted the best for me, but they were desperate. And so at 28, it turned into a, they need to take this into their hands. So, you know, I fought it a lot to the point where I felt like the fighting itself was sinful. You know, I felt like I was standing up for something that I believed in and I wanted to wait upon the Lord, but at the same time, it wasn't really honoring to my parents the way I was reacting towards them. So I sort of like gave in a little bit and would just go and met some people who were supposedly Christians and not, and I kind of did that sporadically for a long time. So then I, you know, I went out on quite a few of those blind dates, and it became my mission to figure out, are they a believer? So that would be the first thing. So, you know, Mark talked about game playing. That was my game. Like, are you a believer?
She had good games.
I was on a mission. So I did that, and then I think for a long time at our church, everyone younger than me got married. You know, it was like a slew of marriages, then babies, then another, like the next generation of younger gals got married, and then they had babies too. So I was kind of like two generations ahead doing my own thing, you know, trying to just be faithful. And I, you know, I have to say, I still, I really just waited upon the Lord. I think that was God's will for me. But there were times, like Mark said, I grew weary in serving. I grew weary in doing things alone. It was hard. I'm not going to say it was like easy or I didn't struggle with it, but there were times when it was difficult. And I think during those times, like later, as I became older, 33, 34, 35, I started spending more time with couples and I really enjoyed that a lot. You know, it was couples bringing me into their home and they're both spending time with me. And I really, you know, I've been in the Shin's home and it would be James and Soren talking to me, not just Soren. And I'd meet with Soren separately. Jane and Jason, you know, you all know they do a really great job of that. You go over and it's not just one person, but they're both kind of engaged in your life. Mike and Sue would always have me over for a meal and we'd all hang out. And I know a lot of you all do that too. I know there's a lot of other couples that do that too, but that became very enjoyable. And, you know, Mark will say that helps the loneliness when you're a part of a family and you get invited into a home and you get to see that taking place, that really provides a community. And yeah, and that was like how I existed until I met this guy.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Julie.
It was all downhill after that.
Moving on. Let's see. Okay, let's start with this question. How did you both come to decide that they were called by God to be for each other? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
how did you
question.
Both come to decide? Yes. What is that process like?
Okay. Well, you know, we met on a blind date, on a setup by mutual friends, not my parents. And same applied. I was on a mission to figure out if he was a believer. And then the fact that he was a seminarian was kind of a strike against him, too, because I hadn't had the best impression. We had a lot of interns come through, and I was a little skeptical. But when I met him, he clearly stood out as someone who was mature in the faith. And he, you know, one of the things I told my sister and one of my friends immediately after was, you know, he was clearly the godliest guy I had met on a date in like 10 years. And that was very evident. And then afterwards I was like, yeah, but I don't think it's going to work out. You know, because they knew my heart. That was like my greatest desire. But, you know, I'll be honest. Is this being recorded? I'm not like this tiny, petite little person. And so I felt a little self-conscious about like me being physically bigger than him. And, you know, God at that time, you know, he took my weakness that I didn't even know I had. I mean, if you ask my friends, they wouldn't call me someone who was like stuck on my looks or anything like that. I was like shallow in that way or whatever. But he took something that made me fearful and brought that into my life to expose that in me. And so when I shared that with, you know, other women, you know, they were very clear, like, when you get married, it's just not a big deal. You know, like, if you're saying he stands out for godliness and this is what you've waited all your life for, then you really need to walk in faith step by step. And I knew that in my head. I really did. I knew it in my head, but I was afraid. You know, I acted in fear instead of faith. And so what I did was, even though I knew it was right, I asked, like, you know, I got counsel from all the different people, the leaders in the church, and I heard what I knew they would say, but I needed that courage to do what was right. Like, I needed that courage to walk in faith and to just trust God. And as I did that, it was just, you know, it wasn't about him, it was about me. It was exposing my shallowness and my fears, my culture, what I thought was appropriate in marriage, what I thought that looks like. And so, you know, like, I just went on each date not thinking, oh, I'm going to marry him. Just, okay, I can go on another one. I can go on another one. And I kept getting to know just so many different sides of him. And God really tempered my fear and showed me that he is greater than my fears and he can provide as I walk in faith. You know, like these things that he possesses and that God's given in Mark are really gifts. And so they're beneficial to me as a believer. And I became really attracted to that. And it was a really neat process. It was encouraging.
I would say what helped us decide, you know, when I first went out with Julie, in spite of the fact that I refer to our first two dates like a job interview with a future employer, because she had a long list of questions that she needed to get through, and I just wanted to hang out and get to know her and see where things were at, and she had that list and it was going down the line, and there was and so people asked me after the second one, said, how did it go, blah blah blah, was there any chemistry, blah blah blah, and I said, well, it's hard to tell because it was like I got called back for the second interview and I'm waiting for the CEO to phone down and say whether I got the job or not, whoever that CEO was, whether it was that James or Bob or whoever else in the picture, you know. But I would say two things. In spite of guarding her heart, which she should, and in spite of the list, and in spite of the fact that she didn't want to show me too much warm and fuzzy initially until she knew whether I was a believer or not, which I think is totally, totally good and awesome, and I would want that for my daughter. I would say it was very apparent very quickly, a spirit of holiness and a spirit of godliness, which is rare. I would say it's rare because it seems like I dated a lot. I didn't. I probably dated once every 2 years, but by the time you're 40, if you add that up, basically, you know, that works out to be like, you know, 10, 12 people, which sounds like I'm a polygamist or something, but you know, that's, I would go out on a date every two, I would get set up on a date every two, someone would remember me like Dan, like Joseph, you know, and they would say, oh, they, you know, here you go, here's the number. And that was within Christian circles. And, you know, like I talked to you today, there's a lot of people who profess Christ, but sanctified lives are a totally different game. And what was abundantly clear was godliness and holiness. And as she told me her life story, her different years in the different ministries, what became apparent to me was that many of the people in her life had fallen by the wayside who had started along with her. People who had started in parachurch, people who she knew in high school, people in college, and you went through this list, and she didn't mean to tell me that, but as I picked up, I thought, wow, it's like, you know, the journey of faith is like a battle, and there are a lot of people who get weeded out along the way, and there's a handful of people on that narrow path who, and I think one of the first thoughts I had was, God really has his hand on this girl or young lady. It's really, really clear that against all odds, there is still a faith here beyond circumstance that has been gifted and given to her, and the Lord has grasped her tightly in her hand. Now, what did I do immediately afterwards? I ran, okay? Everything that I condemned to you, not everything, but a lot of the things, not on appearances, that wasn't an issue. I think the thing that just is a bee in my bonnet, and I was sharing with James today, and I have to repent and ask the Lord for love and graciousness, is when singles come in and their criteria of dating is a combination of physical appearances and personal compatibility of things that they like. And, you know, in part, I think the compatibility issue was me, you know. I think that wasn't there and didn't expose until I met Julie, because she and her background and her family and her community were remarkably different on the externals than they were from me. And, you know, I was so stretched so thin at seminary that time and service and ministry, I didn't know how I was going to drive to Cerritos and make a relationship happen. I know that sounds pathetic, but when you get to know me and know how little I drive and blah, 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 and whatever, and that Julie does most of the driving in her home, or, you know, you'll understand. Those were my hang-ups, because really there was a conviction, there was an expectation in my heart and a desire and a prayer to the Lord that I would date someone in the church. But in my mind, it was in my church. I said, I want to be with someone who I can worship with, minister with, that we can come under the same authority. And I had it all worked out, and Julie sort of broke that paradigm. And when it didn't fit my man-made paradigm, I ran. And I think, but what stuck me and kept me in the loop was the godliness and holiness factor, that she'd been set apart by the love of God. And I had very good godly Christian friends who put a very tight noose around me, who confronted me over that and wouldn't let me go very far. And I remember calling up my friend who graduated from seminary a few years ahead of me, Ben Dosti, and how's it going, blah, 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 here's the details, blah, because they all want to know your details, right? And I said, yeah, but, you know, she lives at Cerrito. She's totally involved in worshiping there, and she's totally maxed out. I'm maxed out here. I don't see how this can work. And he said to me, is she godly? And I said, yes. And then he said, well, Mark, he said, you better, you know, roll out of bed, take your pajamas off, put a decent pair of pants on, tighten up that belt, and get your keys and get in that car and start driving. I was really his counsel. And I agree with Julie in that what it was a journey of faith, because it was way out of my comfort zone. But what you had was the fragrance of Christ. And where the fragrance of Christ is, even if it doesn't feel safe or comfortable, if you're able to just take one step at a time, and it wasn't one step at a time, one step at a time, one step at a time. And to be honest with you, it was one of the sweetest journeys when I look back at that time, because I was way out of all my areas of expertise and just saying, okay, Lord, I know one thing that I can bet the house on this, that Christ is there. And if Christ is there, I'll bet the house on that. Makes me nervous, that's for sure. But it was a house worth betting on.
Thanks for both of your answers and just how you know, it's like both of you are resonating similar themes of faith over fear and how, you know, like, I'm sure too, as you get older in your singleness, there's a lot more preferences and likes and certain things that are very set, and to have to break through those, even those things that you might consider trivial or more like superficial, to have to break through those and take that day by day, date by date journey of faith. It was real. I know, just kind of going through it with you, especially. Well, I know that Jane and I were personally encouraged by that. So thank you for that answer. I want to ask this question that just came in, because I think you did kind of talk, you did touch upon it during the sermon. And right now as well, but maybe we can just kind of once for all put it out there and never let it be asked again. One brother asked, can you touch upon the trap people might fall into about caring too much about the brother or sister's respective spiritual resumes? All right. What is a sensible way to balance this when interested in pursuing? In other words, to not look so much on externals. You can look at the question if you...
It's like an AP question.
Yeah. Didn't we answer this on our SAT? Okay. And let me know if I'm answering this incorrectly. Whoever you are, just you don't have to let yourself be known. Just make lots of noise at the back if I'm on the wrong track. You know, Calvin is really echoing much of the Old Testament when he says our hearts are factories of idols, that you take any good thing and you put it in our life and we'll turn that into an idol. You take a good church and we'll turn that into an idol. You'll take a good ministry, you'll turn that into an idol. You'll take a good set of criteria, like the family is good and we should protect that, or homeschooling, and you can turn any of that into an idol, and that's the propensity of our heart. And the only safeguard of that is to have one hand on the cross at all times. You know, and you're going to see that in your marriage. That's certainly, you know, things start out well with Julie and there's something that's good in the house, that's good from the Lord, even like a home devotional, and that will get turned into an idolatry and the source of conflict in the home. Okay, that's who we are on that aspect of things. So, you know, when you look at spiritual resumes, you can basically, you know, come out with a Christian dating book and put everything down, and it can start well. And depending on the heart of that person, eventually that can become a legalistic issue. And so, you know, the real issue here is, what are our hearts when you look at that aspect of things? And how are we walking with the cross? And what's really our our time with Christ and the nature of the sweetness of that relationship. And when that relationship is sweet, the other things fall into place. It really is a seek first the kingdom of heaven. You know, I'm reading right now, rereading the beginning of John Owen's The Glory of God. And if you have a chance to read that in Sinclair Ferguson's, you know, there's an abridged English language version of that. I'd encourage you to do so, because what he points out in that is that everything that we touch in this life is tainted by sin. And consequently, everything that's in our life is going to be associated with sorrow and pain. That includes marriages, that includes parenting, that includes the best dating life, that includes the best church life. And a lot of times that we come and we get our spiritual resumes out and we think that because it meets that spiritual resume, we've got it covered and we're safe from protection and from sin, and that's not the case. We'll contaminate everything. And what John Owen makes the point is that makes it so much more necessary that our focus is on the glory, the infinite worth and magnitude of Christ and his love and what he's done for us on the cross. And when that's the center, the other things seem to fall into place. But let me take this one step further, because what does that mean in a practical level? One of the things that I've always used for young guys who are coming to be mentored and asking about options for dates and women that they're looking at is, you know, where's the fruit of the Spirit? Something that I will always ask, is there evidence of the fruit of the Spirit? And let me go one step further. Not just is this a happy or joyful person, is there gentleness? Is there patience and long-suffering in the face of sin? Is there contentment? You know, all of these different things, and are they seen in a progressively increasing amount? When we look at those fruit of the Spirit, many of them are reflections or different attributes of the love of God. And you know, that's really the $1 million. We have these things. Did they go on an STM? Are they serving? Are they this, that, and the other thing? And really the question in my mind is, are they growing in a likeness to Christ? And is the fragrance of Christ, does it follow them after every room that they've been in? And is that increasing, in increasing merit? Merit, I don't mean in what they achieve, but in growth. Is that something that you've seen? And when you fall back on that, it comes to something that Julie's brought up frequently. You know, something that she said about me is, she said, it gave me comfort to me that you had long-term friends and that you'd been in a church and a ministry for a long period of time. Now, that can be part of the spiritual resume too. But one of the things that she's pointing out is, you cannot really tell a counterfeit from reality unless there is an extended period of time where you see that person in abundance of situations. Because one of the problems with guys who come out of the seminary is, you can be really nice to the senior pastor all you want. You can give him gifts and be enthusiastic and rah, 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 and all of those things. But it's not until there's an extended period of time where what starts to be exposed is how you're dealing with the least of people. How do you treat them? Do you honor them? Do you listen to them? Do you not cut them off the way you cut the way that you listen to a pastor? You know, all of those things take time. And so certainly one of the help guards of that is, has there been a proven track record in the community of faith of someone? You know, Paul comes out and says, don't make someone an elder who has not been tested. We forget that. You know, we delight. We say, okay, you know, why aren't there more elders, or why aren't we promoting these guys, and so on and so forth? And you've got to come back and look at what Paul is saying. Is there a period of testing? And we need to do that with spouses who are people who are potentially dating. Not that we test them, okay? But how do they respond in a situation of anger? How do they respond when they get the short end of the stick? How do they respond in a short-term mission where they end up having to sleep out in the tent with four other guys while the ladies get the rooms on the inside? How do they respond in those situations? Now, none of us respond perfectly. But the question is, what's the return of that? We all fall down, but is there a sense of repentance, and are they handling that in a way that reflects Christ?
Thank you. Julie, you want to add anything to that from your perspective? That's good. That's a pretty full answer. Thank you. Now, for Julie, from your perspective, is this from dating? What does it look like to be spiritually led? Oh, let's ask. Well, I'll throw this out there. Julie, you can start us off. What does it look like, or what does it mean, or how is it different to be led? while dating versus when you're married?
That's a good question. We've only been married a year and like 8 months, so we're not experts on marriage, right? But we're experts on being single for a long time. And so, we went into dating. You know, we all come into
Honey, I do everything you say.
Oh my goodness. We all.
I'm just kidding.
We all come into one of the things I've learned in being married is that I came into the marriage with my own economy of righteousness. You know, whether I like to admit it or not, like I lived by an economy of righteousness that I held secretly and I didn't know. You know, and so I come in and I have this way that we should all live, and I pretty much, you know, perform the best at it. And so when, you know, Mark can only fall short in my economy. And he has his own economy.
I was in remedial special ed in Julie's economy of righteousness.
And so even in dating, like, I had my own rules in dating, too. Like, I'm the one who put out those books, like, Emotional Purity, that's a good book. And I don't know if Mark read that, he'd probably be like, this is garbage, or I don't know what he would say. But I didn't feel like when we're dating and when before we were engaged that it was a time where I put all my hope in him and then also expected him to come over me as my soul leader. I didn't think that's not what I had learned. That's not what I had read. That's not what I had been convicted of. And then at the same time, Mark really was like, you know, he wants to be engaged, he wants to help, he wants to solve problems, he just loves to be involved. So he wanted to, like, get up all in my quiet time. I would tell him.
Don't touch the quiet time. It's a warning, guys, don't touch the quiet time.
He just, you know, he'd be asking me what I'm reading, and I'd tell him, and that's fine. And I would tell, oh, you know, I find maybe the Gospels are a little more difficult than the Epistles because they're more narrative and blah, blah, blah. Oh, I shared a problem with him. He's ready to solve it. I mean, he's like, read it like this, do like this. Maybe we should do it together. And I'm like, whoa, no. Like,
I might be married to you. I might have your ring on my finger. We might live under the same roof and eat the same food. Don't tell me how to do my quiet time.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of... But this is when we were dating, you know? He's so mean. This is when we were dating. It was really early on. And we had this, like, long... It was probably one of our first conflicts. It was in the car. It was going on and on and on. And I just thought, oh, I'm not comfortable with this. You know, like... We're having an argument about just doing quiet time together. Imagine doing quiet time together. Like, oh my goodness. So, you know, I had a different idea. And I think along the way, though, he was really good. He respected that. I wasn't comfortable with that. So he kind of respected it as like, okay, I get it. I've heard women don't want to do quiet time with their husbands, too. And I'm like, don't put me in that category. Like, you're not my husband. You know, like, we're just... Dating.
We're just dating. We're just dating.
You know, so I had these weird rules, and he had his weird ideas, too. And so,
no way. What do you mean?
It just took time. I think I don't think there's one right way. You know, we're not like the example of marriage. There's no one couple that does it exactly right. So, you know... like leadership and guy, like how much they should be involved. It's good to ask other married people who've been married a long time, who have kids, like what they would tell their children, their older children when they're dating, like what they would advise. That's a good thing. Certainly not to go against your conscience. You know, he shouldn't be telling me, you know, there are things, there are lines that shouldn't be crossed, but then there are some things maybe I was too rigid on. You know why? Like, we could have shared and done things together, and it would have been to my benefit. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers it.
That answers it.
But
yeah.
I'd like to answer for the women. You know, if you get caught up in all the details, eventually you end up in game playing in a marriage. You know, if you're looking at a continual of this is going to be the best paradigm of how to make a transition. This is the paradigm of what you should be doing as a woman while you're dating, and switch in and cash that one in and get the new paradigm once you get married. Mm-hmm. I think you're setting yourself up for a fall, because the heart of the issue, you know, if you just go through and read 1 Peter, enduring through suffering, and I wish I had given that to Julie before she married me, but, you know, the issue really comes down to, are we fully submitted to Christ? And when we are, there's a reserve and a capacity to deal with change. There's a capacity to deal with coming into a situation where you're out of your comfort zone. There's a capacity to deal with an economy that you may think is unfair or doesn't make a lot of sense. And the best preparation that you can do is really to prepare your heart. And I think Julie would agree with this, of really submitting to Christ, and to submitting in Christ in areas that are outside our comfort zone. And goodness knows those exist whether you're single or whether you're married. And really the people who will exceed and excel the best in sharing the love of Christ are the people who have been submitted, whether they're married or not married. And that goes for husbands too.
Thanks for that. For Mark, maybe to briefly follow up, then how much just practically does it look differently for a man as he leads, quote unquote, while dating, as opposed to leading in marriage? You know, there's dating, you know, it's not in the Bible, it's such a nebulous area. There's so many different opinions, so many different practical strategies, so many different books, so many different, you know, I think a lot of the guys I know have asked questions like I'm not her husband, so I don't want to act like her husband, but then we're in this like limbo phase. So what's appropriate, what's helpful, what's not?
Sure.
If you can just kind of tackle that.
You know, when we get into a one size fits all, we get into legalism. I guess I'm like an old man banging the same drum over and over again, and I guess I may be a little bit like my beloved father some ways about career and other things, but I'm gonna bang that drum anyways. So, you know, dating is a cultural phenomena. You know, I mean, where do we find the paradigm of dating in the Bible? Dating's not necessarily prescribed. I'm sure you've heard that over and over again. Well, it should be courtship. Well, it should be this, that, and the other thing. Let's be honest about it. All of these are basically modern, postmodern, American cultural phenomena, you know, when we go in that. And I think the lodestone and the guide really has always been, really, is everything that you do, does it exemplify the love of Christ and the glory of God and what you do? And is that the direction that you're going? And when you look at dating and marriage, hopefully, somewhere along that line, there should be a point where you're starting to go in the direction where this is all one continuum. And it's going in a direction that you're dating, and that your marriage should be an extension of your dating, and that your parenting should be an extension of your marriage, that it's all one continuum. And so it's really, and what happens during that continuum is you have increasing levels of commitment and increasing levels of responsibility. And I think, you know, if we're really starting, from my point, for most guys who are dating, I'm saying, look, you know, one of the hardest things for me is in 1 Peter is to live with my wife in an understanding way and honor her as a weaker vessel. You know, I fail at that miserably on a regular basis. I wish I had started doing that very early in my dating relationship. And if I had, what I tried to do in my dating relationship is I tried to treat her like my wife. My thought was, I need to honor her and respect her in all of those ways. But I think the transition comes with leading is that there's an increasing responsibility and an increasing area. And early in the dating relationship, you don't have those areas or jurisdictions. It's a much smaller area. But you can only find out that area, depending on the person or the place, to a certain extent, by beginning to try to learn them and to understand them and to honor them as a weaker vessel and do your due diligence in really understanding what makes them tick. And also to begin, quite frankly, by diligently praying for that person. And I think as time goes along, the commitments and the responsibilities get greater, but it's the same principle.
Thanks for that. No, and I'm glad that you're comfortable banging the same old drum, because I think, you know, that's what we need to hear. I think it would be maybe discouraging in some ways if you said it was one size fits all. If every, you know, if you just followed these rules and you followed this paradigm of dating and leading and dating and following and dating and, you know, how to date, then it would all just kind of work out and just magically make everything, you know, beautiful. Sure. And so I think to just kind of get to that heart level, you know, is it for the glory of God in increasing ways, then, and I think that in a sense encourages us and comforts us.
And when you're doing it in love, let me qualify this, you know, you're not forcing the issue. I mean, I'm a terrible person at forcing the issue. If I think it's right, if quiet time's right for a couple, we need to be doing this. You know, full court press. Well, that's not loving, because the truth be told is different women are ready for that at different times in their life, and that personal time with the Lord is their personal time with the Lord, and that should be sacred. And there's a time and a place, and when the Spirit works and they're ready, they're ready. And my failure in leading in that area was not listening to the Lord and listening to my future to be spouse and dealing with it in a loving way.
All right. Moving on then. What do you think about, and, you know, feel free to take this any way you want. What do you think about accountability in your dating life? And what does that mean to you?
You want to start on that one, or do you want me? Okay. Have as much of it as you possibly can get. You know, but I would choose your accountability wisely, and I would choose your accountability well. I think there's, you know, a phenomena which we experience right now where small groups are big, and the hope and the desire at their best is that they provide accountability, and they do to a certain degree, but they can descend into people basically pooling gossip or selectively sharing what they want to share and what they don't want to share. And I think, you know, with accountability, you know, is there really someone who is going to hold you accountable? For me, my desire was to have someone who was accountable, who was a godlier person than I was. I think to a certain extent, that's one of the reasons why we tried to get together even before we were even engaged with my pastor and also James and Sarin, that there would be people who could see my blind spots. And so I think, you know, godliness is the criteria. If you're just having accountability with your friend and he's got the same blind spots or the same sins as you and there's a conflict, you know, what's going to come out? Well, she was so wrong, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's going to take your side. And a lot of times that's what we want. So I think accountability is absolutely necessary. I think accountability is necessary, especially for purity, because this is an area that we struggle in. You know, I talked to my pastor about that. As far as what accountability he would want me to have for that, I talked about that to Julie right at the very beginning of dating, of saying, look, these are going to be the boundaries for purity, that our desire is to be holy as unto the Lord, and that if we're really marrying for the glory of God, then we're dating for the glory of God, and that means this is a place of holiness. And so, you know, you put in those things, but I wanted people who I would see frequently, and I would also want people who were godlier than I, who would basically call me on my shenanigans.
Julie, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would agree with him. And another aspect of the accountability can be like community, like bringing in community. Yeah. And, you know, once we started dating, because everyone had been praying, you know, people had been praying for him for like 30 years to be married. So like we had like all these people to meet, like, oh, they want to meet you. They want to meet you. And even at my church, it was like, I want you to meet them. I want you to meet them. So we spent a lot of time meeting with people, but that was actually to our blessing, you know, to be able to do that. And also, you know, for me personally, I had a lot of single friends that I didn't want to leave by the wayside during that process. So it was important to me that they get to know him and they get to spend time with him. And we needed to have our alone time too, but we did spend a lot of time with other people. And that actually helped to get to know one another too, like the context that they came from. When I met Mark's friends, I was really comforted, you know, like, I already had respect for him and thought he was godly, but once I met his friends, I thought, oh, they're normal, and they're really nice, you know? That's really awesome. So it was just, I think, you know, bringing the community in. And he was, you know, he was really good in that way. He's always led spiritually, just saying, you need accountability, you need to talk to people. He's been very vocal about that from the beginning. And I appreciate that, because that's like a weakness in me. I'm always like, I don't want to bother people, I don't want to bother people. So he really pushes me in that way. But I think that helps, like being part of other people's lives together is actually fun and really neat.
Can I add one thing to that? You know, there's, you know, singles ministries, you know, the chronic phenomena is covert action, right? Is, you know, people sort of disappear and a handful of people know that they're dating and nobody knows about the details and nobody wants to go public, right? So you have this undercover espionage the whole time, right? And then it pops up and someone will tell a leader, did you know these people are dating? It's like, what? You know, and stuff will come out at Christmas events or whatever, and that's all crazy. And let me come out and say this. Why do we do covert operation? Covert operation is fear of man. We don't want to go public, because if we go public, that means there's a commitment. I've got accountability. People are going to see me. They're going to see that I'm sitting together with this gal and that I've asked her out on a date, right? And so it all ratchets back. We all want a Facebook, right? We all want to basically have a number of friends, and if it doesn't work out, I click a button and they go away, right? And nobody knows, and it's secret and private, and it's all in my room. And we laugh about that, but I had an older pastor in biblical counseling come and talk to me and grieve to me about how it was such a big deal for his son to go and ask someone out for a cup of coffee. And he said, in my day, we just go out and do that all the time. You know, what's the big deal? And I said, well, you know what? All of the warm-up and investigation and the precursor action is all happening on the internet, which is safe and secure, and there's extra barriers of intimacy. So in case things head south, we don't really have to own up to our decisions and deal with the consequences. And what ends up happening is that emotional intimacy is taken away, and to go out and make that step, to really be face-to-face, we've broadened that gap where we no longer have the skills to do that, but we also no longer have the courage to come and handle the consequences, because we're not handling consequences in a relationship on a regular basis. How often do we avoid dealing with people because we just email? And I'm as guilty of this as anybody else. How much do we just say, okay, well, I'll just do it by email, and then we'll delay a little bit of while, and then they'll get the message. I'll be honest with you, what I've seen in singles of how they interact with one another on emails, in my mind, is an abomination to the love of God. Lies, deceit, all manner of stalling tactics and manipulation, which is just a way of me not having to deal with the issue face to face. And that's the plague of our generation. But I think if we're doing the things that we're supposed to be doing, we're active in body life. There is an accountability there. So if you're showing up with someone who you're dating and you're at worship time together or you're at church together or those things are happening, God provides you with protection that's there. If you're willing to deal with your fear of man and responsibility and step up and address the commitment. And this goes both ways, because there are many times girls will come and say, he led me on. We went out for a cup of coffee. We sat together in church. And then later on, he decided I wasn't for him. And, you know, I thought he was going to marry me and blah, 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 and this, that, and the other thing. Okay, well, that's false expectations on the other hand. The issue is, let's get to know one another. Let's be accountable in the community. Let's do what we're supposed to be doing. We're worshipers of God. Let's worship God and let the chips fall where they may, as Bob would say. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, let's be godly enough and Christ-like enough to own up why it didn't work out and resolve it and find a way to resolve it so though both people can leave, albeit there will be tenderness and frailty and it'll be difficult, but let's do it in a way that's pleasing to Christ, and let's show to the world that we don't function the same way they do, that we have to slink around so that nobody knows, and that we can say, yeah, it's a little awkward, yeah, it's a little uncomfortable, yeah, I have to see this person at the same church and fellowship group all the same time, but you know what? The love of Christ is greater. I can do it, and I can do it in a dignity and a way to honor and glorify the Lord. Sorry, that's my pet peeve about covert action.
No passion, this man.
All right. Well, I think for the sake of time, I mean, I have more questions, and I think we can go on. And, you know, they're definitely available. And if you even just get to know them for a little bit, just, you know, what I love about both of you, very honest and transparent. and been a source of encouragement to me personally, and I want to thank you. And so let's give them a round of applause for this time. And then I'm going to ask our brother Eugene is going to come up, close our time in prayer, and I think give some final announcements.